Welcome to the Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Joe Alley, Matt Marchese with you as we discuss another Waiver Wire podcast edition of the program. Of course, Week 7 is now in the books, and we can look ahead to Week 8. Matt, it's pretty crazy. The fantasy season basically is, what, like over half done at this point? I don't know where all the time has gone. It's pretty crazy. And before we get to the Waiver Wire pickups, of course, I did want to look at some of the developments that have come out, certainly some on Sunday and some in the last couple of days, in terms of situations that have now changed that I think do affect fantasy lineups going forward. And one of them, of course, has to do out in Indianapolis. I don't know if you saw this statistic. It was something like, dating back to 2018, the Colts have paid, I think it was from SpotTrac, the Colts have paid 12 quarterbacks a grand total of like $145 million since the year 2018. Like, that's only 4 years. Some of that does include like dead money paid to Andrew Luck and, you know, the guys like Carson Wentz and Matt Ryan and Phillip Rivers all getting paid like gargantuan amounts of money for single years. But of course, the news now is that Sam, and I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce his last name, I think it's Erlinger, but Sam Erlinger is now going to be the starting quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts moving forward. I don't know about you, I almost feel like this is just a way for the Colts to save face, because clearly Matt Ryan is now injured. He has some kind of shoulder separation, and he also just hasn't been all that great this year. So it might just be a way for him to like let Ryan gracefully save face as he retires after this year. But Sam Erlinger is going to be the guy going forward at QB in Indy, so that's going to affect basically every single fantasy player, and there's some pretty highly owned ones there in Indy.
Yeah, it's a mess. And it's Erlinger, I believe. It's Erlinger.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it doesn't matter because he's not going to be on fantasy rosters anyway. although I'll be putting a couple of bids on him in some dynasty leagues for sure, because you can never have too many quarterbacks. But yeah, I mean, it's such a mess in Indy. Ever since Andrew Luck retired, it's like they've just not been able to find the guy. And part of the problem is they just haven't invested the draft capital in finding said player, and so that is super frustrating. But I mean, I don't know what this means for Michael Pittman Jr. Paris Campbell just started to play better, as did Alec Pierce, and Jonathan Taylor is gonna, you know, when you have a quarterback that maybe isn't all that great, it really does affect the running game as well, because if you're not really a threat to pass, they can just stack boxes against Jonathan Taylor and kind of have their way with them. So I'm downgrading Michael Pittman to, you know, like a back end wide receiver two until we see a little bit more. Although, you know, we could say the same thing for someone like Jerry Jeudy when Brett Rippon came in, and he ended up having a really nice game for the Broncos this past weekend. So it's kind of just a really cautious approach when it comes to the Colts players. Like, I mean, I'm not going out of my way to go get Paris Campbell now. I think I still stick with guys like Michael Pittman Jr. and Alec Pierce. But other than that, like, the tight ends you weren't touching anyway, just because of the way that they rotate them. Jonathan Taylor should still be considered an RB1, but probably more towards the middle end or back end of the RB1 conversation until further notice. So it's basically a just wait and see approach with everybody on this Indianapolis offense, because we just don't know what Sam Ellinger is going to do. I mean, it doesn't have a ton of draft capital. This is literally just, let's see what we have in this guy, because the season has gone kind of sideways for us. See what we have in this guy, and if he's not good enough, then we need to invest in a quarterback, whether it be in the draft or in a trade. But I can't see a situation where this team goes out and trades for another quarterback this season.
Yeah, I would be surprised if that's the case, right? I really do feel like, Matt, when it comes to the QB situation in Indianapolis, basically since Andrew Luck had the shock retirement a number of years ago, it's just that they just have never gone out and invested in a high draft pick. And that might just be the only way for this team to move forward at this point. That was like the only – Denver maybe to a certain degree as well, but they're now tied to Russell Wilson for a really long time.
Forever.
So,
forever.
Yeah, for the rest of time, essentially, right? So I am really curious to see what it ends – like if it ends up being, let's say – Jimmy G next year, would anyone be all that surprised? Probably not, right? All things considered. But the Colts definitely have to try something. And hey, like you said, if it ends up being they're just seeing what they have in this guy, then it's probably not the worst case scenario, because again, Matt Ryan has been really pretty bad. Let's face it, he's been pretty bad all things considered so far this season. Like you said, fantasy wise for the rest of these guys, I do think it changes the value of basically everyone. Jonathan Taylor is probably the guy it changes in my view the least. And yeah, with Paris Campbell, like I was going to talk about Paris Campbell in the waiver wire pickups, but at this point, and we kind of had this conversation when Joe Flacco got benched, and again, I don't want to say like got benched necessarily, because Flacco was always going to be the backup to Zach Wilson. It's just that Wilson got injured in the preseason. But when Flacco went away and Wilson came in, you and I talked about on this podcast that, hey, maybe in the end, temper expectations for Garrett Wilson, temper expectations for basically every member of this offense, and then Breece Hall goes on a tear, and then now he's injured and is done for the year. But like it's just when QB changes happen, it's never... Sometimes things stay the same, and sometimes they change wildly, right? So we saw that with the Jets, and we're probably going to see that with the Colts. So picking up Paris Campbell waiver wire wise, you're probably chasing the points if you spend too much of your fab dollars, let's say, or a high waiver priority on Campbell. So I mean, it's also possible that because you know Erlinger was the backup for such a long time, maybe he does have some kind of rapport with the lower ranked guys, but. I mean, I don't know. That seems kind of like a crapshoot. So until we see how the Colts passing offense kind of figures itself out over the next couple of weeks, then I would probably just downgrade virtually everyone in the Indy offense. And I mentioned Breece Hall. That's kind of the other situation I wanted to get to with you, because of course Breece Hall tears his ACL. Really unfortunate. He was such a dynamic runner. You and I were really really high on him coming out of college, and I think a lot of people were, because that was clearly reflected in his draft status, because he was drafted like in the fifth, sixth round, which is pretty high for a rookie, I would say, who at the time was splitting carries with Michael Carter, and then he just completely took over that backfield. Like, my goodness, he looked so, so good. So he tears the ACL, slight damage to the meniscus as well, so we wish him a speedy recovery and that he's back for draft season next year, which seems pretty likely given that we're in October of 2022 and he'll be drafted in like August of 2023. So here's hoping he comes back full force next season. But in the interim, there was a period of time in like the 12 hours after Breece Hall got injured that it looked like Michael Carter was going to be one of the hottest waiver pickups if he was available at all. And then the Jets go out and trade for James Robinson from the Jacksonville Jaguars. So now J-Rob, Matt, is going to be, I don't know, like the necessarily RB1, but it certainly feels like this is going to be yet another, unless things drastically change, it just feels like this is going to be another kind of fantasy quagmire or running back by committee that we're going to have to navigate here.
Yeah, so the way I kind of see it is James Robinson to me is the early down back and Michael Carter is the passing down back. I mean, listen, I was surprised. James Robinson played significantly less snaps this past week, and obviously it had nothing to do with the trade, because we didn't know that Breece Hall had a torn ACL when both teams were playing at 1 o'clock. But there was some indication given that maybe it had something going on with his knee that maybe was causing him some uncomfortability. And having said all that, James Robinson, as far as I know, the deal is official. James Robinson passed the physical, so he's fine. I think you can fire up James Robinson as probably like a back end RB2. With some upside, just because we've seen how good James Robinson is. And I know that he's coming off the Achilles injury, and I know that it isn't always the best thing for a running back to come off of. But having said that, he has a track record in this league. James Robinson is a very good player. And is he as good as Michael Carter in the passing game? No, but he's certainly not incompetent in that part of the game. And he'll be a good addition for the Jets here, who they want to run the ball. They haven't had a lot of success with Zach Wilson throwing the ball. They want to run the ball. I think that James Robinson is locked into 15 touches a week in an offense that, like I said, wants to run the ball. And let's face it, in Jacksonville, as much as I love James Robinson, Travis Etienne was always going to be the guy. You and I had that conversation. We were very kind of, well, you know, maybe it's just going to take some time. And, you know, we were very frustrated with the Travis Etienne usage at the beginning of the year. But this is now Travis Etienne's backfield in Jacksonville, as we thought it would be. So it's probably the best case scenario for anybody that has rostered James Robinson, because I think based on what we saw this past week, he was probably unstartable. And now you go from James Robinson is potentially a drop to James Robinson is probably the starting running back in New York for the Jets, a team that, like I mentioned, wants to run the football, and that's how they want to play. So it's a good spot for him to land. And I think what it does, and we're going to get to a player later where we can maybe talk more about this, but I think James Robinson getting traded has now set the market for, you know, running backs of his ilk that could get traded. We talk about the Kareem Hunts. We talk about Cam Akers, like those types of players that people have been inquiring about. I'm certain that those, you know, the price is now set. It's not an expensive price. I think it's a sixth round pick that has a condition on it that if he reaches 600 rushing yards, that it becomes a fifth round pick. So it's not a significant amount, but for teams that are looking to maybe make a push that could use some running back help, it's a very interesting price to pay. It's not a ton, and it could be for a guy that ends up rounding out your roster really nicely. So James Robinson in a good spot. Travis Etienne is now absolutely wheels up in Jacksonville.
Oh, yeah. RB1 status probably for Etienne, probably for the rest of the year. I'm, you know, it's funny. We did the buy, sell, hold thing on these podcast editions a couple times to begin the season, like in weeks 2, 3, and so on. And I think I had asked you about Etienne. I think the very first time we did it, I asked you about Etienne, and you were like, oh, yeah, he's a hold for sure. And I asked you that as someone who holds Etienne in a couple of leagues, and I was pretty bullish on him. And then I was like, oh man, like this stinks, like he's not being used at all. And yeah, now there's virtually no competition for touches for Etienne. Like, I don't know how the, I mean, Trevor Lawrence himself is always a bit of a, he's athletic, he moves around pretty well. He himself is probably not like in a Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson type of sense, but just at the goal line, he is mobile and agile enough to really stuff it across himself. So I guess that's just like the smallest of concerns, but generally speaking, Travis Etienne looked pretty good. He probably would have had another touchdown this past Sunday had he not fumbled like right at the goal line. He was like, he busted through the line. He was at like the 2-yard line and got tripped up. And I think his arm kind of came off his body. Like he usually, you know, running backs usually have the football tucked against their kind of rib cage, and his arm came off and then the ball fell out and the Giants recovered it. So, I mean, look, that's stuff you clean up because he's effectively a rookie after missing all of last season. But I am looking forward to seeing the Lawrence to Etienne connection continue from college into the NFL, and it certainly looks like it will. I just want to say real quick before we get to the waiver wire stuff, Matt, I have now experienced the true duality of fantasy football in a couple of leagues. I'm in like 4 or 5 different leages, and in one league I am 2-5 after week 7 is now in the books. I'm the second highest scoring team in the league, and I have the second most points against in the entire league. In another league, I am 7-0, and I have the 7th fewest points in the league. And I think I have like the, I don't know, like the 8th fewest points against or something. Like it just, this year is a particularly weird, as we talked about before, in the sense that like scoring is down by like 2 touchdowns a game in every single game across the league or something absurd like that. But boy, like the fantasy football swings, like the highs and lows are crazy. I almost feel like we've both been playing for a really long time. And even so, whenever stuff like this happened, I always like sit back and go, oh my God, I thought fantasy football was supposed to be fun.
Play fantasy football, they said. It would be fun, they said. And it has been, you know, I looked even at some of the scores in the leagues that I was playing in this week. And I know that this past week was one of those kind of bye week hells because the Bills were on a bye, the Rams were on a bye, the Eagles were on a bye. And who was the other team that was on a bye? Why am I blanking Vikings? On the other team? The Vikings, yeah. So yeah. Lots of fantasy relevant players, like high-end fantasy players that were out, and you could see it across the board. Just and it's just been a year of, you know, this doesn't make sense. And what we've seen is we've seen defenses catch up to offenses. The rules had changed. The rules were, hey, you know what? We want scoring in the NFL. We're going to try and increase that. We're going to call more penalties on the defense. That was the mandate. Pass interference calls were going to be more. Roughing the passer calls are going to be more because offense sells and defense doesn't. Unfortunately, that's the way it goes. But defensive coordinators and scheming has gotten so good across the NFL that the offensive numbers have fallen, which is why we've seen a decrease in scoring across the league. And what we've also seen is offenses need to adjust. And I wonder if we're going to see that in the second half of the season, because that tends to happen as teams start to get figured out. They have to change things up a little bit. But it's also been, in a lot of cases, guys that we weren't expected, guys that weren't heavily rostered. And we're going to get to some of the quarterbacks in our waiver wire conversation here, but that's what's changed. And I think that this is just what this year is going to be like. It's going to be weird. It's not going to make a ton of sense. You're going to have to play the waiver wire really well, which is why you listen to this podcast, so that we can help you out. And I think that's kind of how we need to approach this year. Even some of the guys that you thought were going to be studs or guys that you thought were going to have breakout years, it just hasn't happened. So there's plenty of factors, but defense is catching up to offenses has been kind of the biggest reason going forward. But I know exactly what you're saying. It's been a weird year in fantasy just with, I score all these points, I have all these points against. It's just, that's the unluckiness of the schedule sometimes. And it's also a reason why, and I've tried to hammer this point home, and I wish that other leagues would do this, or other platforms would do this, but Sleeper has it right. I mean, Sleeper has it. I know in CBS, you can do it as well. You do have to pay for CBS to have that function. But the function is, I know in CBS, you can play two matchups. So it'd be against one team and then against another team in the same week. So you have two matchups. It kind of eliminates the luck factor. And in Sleeper, you play one matchup against another opponent, and then you play against the league median. So it's another way to kind of balance out the schedule so that you can avoid that schedule luck or unluckiness. And the good teams really are the good teams in the standings. I really wish that more platforms would do that.
I have done this before in my fantasy basketball leagues on ESPN. Like it does a little box you can check, and it's like play, I forget exactly what it says, but it's like play two games every week. And then there's like a little question mark. And if you hover over it, it says something like, If you check this box, then you will play two games every week, one against your opponent and one against, like, one win will be assessed if you are in the top half of scoring of your league or the bottom half of scoring in your league. And I we did that for fantasy basketball last year, and yeah, it worked pretty well. It worked pretty well. So I've never actually looked in the settings in ESPN to see if you can do it, but I mean, I would imagine if they allow it in like the basketball, and I think the hockey part of ESPN allows it too. I would guess they allow it in fantasy football, but you never know. But I do agree. I do like that. I do very much like that. Let's go to our waiver wire pickups for the week. A lot of them, relatively speaking, highly owned, but I think it's worth discussing these guys because, again, bye weeks, maybe they're on people's benches that are going to be dropped because of roster maneuvering and so on, roster management. So let's get to these two quarterbacks, as you alluded to them. Daniel Jones, rostered in just 41% of Yahoo leagues, and Justin Fields. And again, you are the captain of the Justin Fields fan club, so I will leave the Justin Fields stuff to you. You know what, why don't we start with Fields? Because I admit, I think a lot of people had the Patriots as their survivor pool pick. I think a lot of people waited, like myself, to start the Patriots defense on Monday Night Football, and woo, they look terrible. The Patriots defense, I still have faith against that in them against QBs that are not as mobile as Justin Fields, which leads me to believe that, you know, maybe they'll have an okay game against Zach Wilson, but Zach Wilson has some wheels. He can move around. Josh Allen, I mean, you're not starting any defense against the Bills anyways, so I mean, like, whatever, but boy, Josh Allen, he has two matchups against the Patriots defense coming. He's going to rip them a new one. But having said that, Justin Fields was moving all over the field. He looked pretty good. Your notes here, he was QB4 the last 3 weeks. Should you be going out and spending any sort of waiver wire dollars on Mr. Fields?
Oh, I think you absolutely should. If you look at just the rushing floor, and I know he's not throwing a bunch, but Justin Fields, in the last 3 weeks where he is QB4, he's completed 71% of his passes, 51.9% of his passes, and 61.9% of his passes. But the difference here for me is that, yes, he does have two interceptions in those 3 weeks, but he does have three touchdown passes. He also has the one touchdown running, which he did yesterday in the game. But this is the key for me. In the last 5 weeks, Justin Fields' rushing total, the lowest rushing total that he's had, is 47 yards. He did that twice on 8 carries both games. He did it against Houston, and did it against Minnesota. The last 2 weeks, Justin Fields has had 88 rushing yards and 82 rushing yards against Washington and New England. The rushing floor is absolutely there. The one thing that I will say about Justin Fields as well is he's starting to look like a more comfortable NFL quarterback, starting to make better throws. And I honestly wonder what he would look like with a better offensive line, with someone other than Darnell Mooney to throw the ball to. Like, he's throwing like the Equanimeous St. Brown. And I like Cole Kmet, but it hasn't been a good year for Cole Kmet, partially because of the passing offense. But Justin Fields is starting to look better. He's had, you know, the passing yard numbers aren't going to be there this year, but what he offers you with a rushing floor, like if he is only getting 50 rushing yards, which is, you know, that's not a lot, but it's still 5 points for you. And as long as he's not turning the ball over, the 5 points, and if he throws a touchdown, you're into 9 points, and then it'll be double digits. So he's a good player. The rushing floor is what the key is for me. The Chicago Bears want to run the football. It's going to be David Montgomery. It's going to be Khalil Herbert. It's going to be Justin Fields. And he does have a tough matchup against the Cowboys this coming week. But after that, his next three matchups are the Dolphins, the Lions, and the Falcons. So he has plenty of opportunity to not only do things with his legs, but with his arms against those three defenses after the Cowboys.
I'm looking at some of the stats for him, and yeah, he has looked much, much better. I actually own him in a couple of leagues as kind of like my backup QB. And it's funny, like if for example, Lamar Jackson, who is another mobile QB and is obviously very, very good, like low key Lamar Jackson has been bad in the last like month, yep, let's say, right? And like if you, yep, had started Justin Fields over Lamar Jackson, which honestly, like I always say, like, you, even if the end results are not there in fantasy, like there's no sane person who would have benched Lamar Jackson for Justin Fields with the matchups both teams had this week, right? Like there's just no one would have, like, that was still the correct decision, even though in the end Fields outscored Lamar Jackson by like a healthy margin, right? But having said that, if like this keeps up somehow, and I think I had seen earlier today that Rashad Bateman, Mark Andrews, and offensive tackle Ronnie Stanley, who is pretty important to that offense, all three of them did not practice for the Ravens today on Tuesday. So if that's the case, then if that's something that is still going to be not so great going forward into Sunday's games, then maybe there is a world where you consider not starting Lamar Jackson in for example, this particular weekend, right? So I think it's just those kinds
of things.
They're
actually in the Thursday nighter Baltimore this week.
Oh, well, even worse.
So something to keep an eye on, yeah.
Yeah, even worse. So that's the case. So it's just, and on the other half of that conversation also, Brady is the QB on the other side. I want to have that conversation when we get to the end, just before we get out of here. But it's just those are kind of things to monitor. And I mean, Justin Fields is not a bad backup option. Another QB who's not a bad backup option, Daniel Jones. We mentioned him, 41% owned, QB9 on the season. Daniel Jones is interesting to me because he doesn't, not a lot of pass catching options. We talked about Wandale Robinson last week. But at the same time, he provides, even with Saquon Barkley there, he provides a very nice floor because he adds a lot of value with his legs. Like honestly, like people don't talk enough probably about how Daniel Jones is talented as a rushing quarterback. Like, especially when you have like the conversation about the Jalen Hurts, the Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Kyler Murray's of the world. You don't honestly talk about Daniel Jones, but he is very good with scampering around with his feet there.
Well, I mean, he had 107 rushing yards on 11 attempts this past week against Jacksonville and added the touchdown. Yeah, and he's been Daniel Jones again in the same conversation as Justin Fields. He throws the ball a little bit more. Here's the difference with Daniel Jones this year and then in previous years. How many interceptions do you think Daniel Jones has thrown this year in 7 games?
Boy, if I had to look, I'll say this, Matt. I have owned Daniel Jones literally every single year of his career until this year. I was like, I want off this ride. I want off the roller coaster ride. Yeah, I'm done. I've owned him in multiple leagues literally every year, and I'm like, no, I'm out. If I had to guess, knowing that he hasn't thrown a lot, I'm probably gonna guess like 5.
2. He's thrown 2 interceptions. I can't see how many fumbles he has, but he has 2 interceptions. He has 3 rushing touchdowns, and he's thrown 6 passing touchdowns. He's thrown 3 of those touchdowns in the last 2 weeks against Baltimore and Jacksonville. We're starting to see him creep up. He's completed 66.7% of his passes. The way his numbers are going right now, it kind of reminds me of like a little bit of rookie year Josh Allen and into second year Josh Allen before the huge breakout in year 3. That's what it kind of reminds me of, Daniel Jones. And he doesn't have the same arm strength, but that's the type of season that he's having. The completion percentage has gone up. They're allowing him to throw the ball more than they did last year. And I know it's under a new coaching regime with Brian Daboll there, but the rushing numbers are starting to get there now. In his last 5 games, he has eclipsed 68 rushing yards on three of those 5 occasions. In the games that he didn't, he had 6 rushing yards against Baltimore, but he did throw for 2 touchdowns in that one. He also had 37 in the week against Green Bay, who is a very good defense. That was the game in London. But he ran all over Jacksonville. And this Giants team is way better than we thought. The Giants at this point, if you told me that they were going to be 6-1, I would have absolutely laughed you out of the building. And if we look at the Giants schedule, they have Seattle, whose defense is just barely okay. They have the Texans, who is very beatable, and they have the Lions in the next 3 games. So as the bye weeks start to come up, like Patrick Mahomes is on a bye this week, Justin Herbert's on a bye this week, you could do a hell of a lot worse than starting Daniel Jones this week. And that's why he's got to be, if you have any of those guys, or if your quarterback has a bye coming up, he's absolutely a guy that you should go out and be targeting.
Of course, this is the week I am playing Daniel Jones in a number of weeks, a number of leagues. So I'm like secretly hoping for him to stink, but you know what? I try not to vocalize that too much because
no, fantasy gods don't like that. Yeah, they don't like that.
Exactly, the fantasy gods will smite you if you do those kinds of things. So don't take it from me. Don't be like me. Let's get to the last couple of waiver wire pickups. Trio of running backs, and actually, you know, I have another running back I want to get to at the very end, real quick. But you have a trio here. Gus Edwards is the first one rostered in 44% of Yahoo leagues. And look, when someone is rostered in like 40% or more of Yahoo leagues, or just leagues generally speaking, Yahoo or otherwise, it like probably means they are rostered in most semi to pretty competitive leagues, I would guess. But still, if there's like a chance that out there in your free league you joined or whatever that Gus Edwards is available, I wholeheartedly agree, Matt, that you should be running to go pick him up, because we saw, like, one of the things we talked about on the show this past Sunday was with Gus Edwards' return. And remember, J.K. Dobbins is on the IR. He's getting the arthroscopic knee surgery. Won't return until week like 12, 13. And remember, we're just going into week 8 now. So that's a full month and a bit away. And even when he does return, will he be effective? Probably not. Maybe are we looking for more of a 2023 return for J.K. Dobbins at this point? It very well might be the case. But if that is the case, then Gus Edwards seems to be the guy. Like, Kenyon Drake was basically non-existent. Justice Hill got some run, but I mean, he also was non-existent. Like, and Lamar Jackson had a pretty pedestrian day. Again, the Buccaneers defense is no joke, so maybe the Buccaneers defense is not the defense you want to be running out Gus Edwards against. But at the same time, just having him on your roster, I think, is a good idea, because clearly, Gus the Bus is pretty talented, and clearly the Ravens trust him. And with the quagmire that is the Ravens running back situation, if you can get one of those guys, given how much they like to run the ball, I think you take it.
You do. And the thing is that Gus Edwards, he did get a bunch of the work. Gus Edwards he has the most experience in this offense. He had 16 carries. Kenyon Drake He had 16 carries for 66 yards and 2 touchdowns. He was clearly getting the red zone work. Kenyon Drake had 11 carries for 5 yards. That's not good. He averaged half a yard per carry. That stinks. Justice Hill was the more... he was the better of the backs in terms of Justice Hill and Kenyon Drake. He had 5 carries for 26 yards. But clearly, Gus Edwards was the guy. And the guy is... He's just solid. When he plays in games, when he's not hurt, Gus Edwards is absolutely solid. And we talk about, you know, the Bucs defense. It's been good, but they just gave up, as I'm counting here, 181 rushing yards to Deonta Foreman and Chuba Hubbard. Deonta Foreman had 15 carries for 118 yards. Chuba Hubbard had 9 carries for 63 yards and a touchdown. This Bucs team, just in general, I don't know what the heck has happened to them, but they haven't been good. Listen, this is the second week that Gus Edwards is on the waiver wire pod. Last week was the week you should have picked him up. Shame on you for not picking him up when we told you to, because we told you that Gus Edwards was going to be the guy, and he has been. Listen, in an offense that wants to run the football, when you can get the number one guy, his first game back, he had 16 carries. What's he going to do the rest of the way if he stays healthy? I really like the upside here for Gus Edwards.
Yeah, I think so too. I think Gus Edwards is he going to be a top 10 running back this year? Probably not. But at the same time, he is going to be someone who can contribute here and there. And like you said, Matt, a lot of guys going to be on their buys in the next couple of weeks, certainly this week in particular and going forward. And like you mentioned, the Bucs defense, you know, it's a good point you brought up. In my head, the Bucs rush defense is still a pretty good one, but they did just get gashed by the Carolina Panthers, led by PJ Walker, of all people, XFL legend PJ Walker. Also, can I just say that Baker Mayfield has, I mean, I know he's injured, but he has now had his job stolen by PJ Walker. And I mean, that can't bode well for you. Like, can I just ask you real quick, is Baker Mayfield a bust? He is, right? Like, it's not a bad thing to call him that anymore, is it?
If you get drafted first overall and you are not a Pro Bowler almost every year, then as far as I'm concerned, you're a bust. And I don't even think he's made one Pro Bowl, let alone multiple. So I think that train has absolutely sailed. The only time he would have been even close to a Pro Bowl was his rookie year, when I believe he broke Andrew Luck's rookie passing touchdown record or tied it. And then he's been kind of horrible ever since.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think you're right. I was just curious. I was really rooting for Baker when he got traded out of the Browns, because I don't really care for the Browns after the whole Deshaun Watson thing. But and then he just like was bad. He just was bad. And the moment PJ Walker came in, the offense seemed to move a little better. Also, does that coincide with Matt Rhule's firing? Probably to a certain degree, yes. But ooh boy, I just not a great look for old Baker. You mentioned Deonta Foreman, though. We talk about the Carolina Panthers, and he was one of the other guys you wanted to bring up here on the waiver wire pod. Rostered in 50% of Yahoo League, so a lot of people went and rushed to pick him up. Maybe you grabbed him for free last week off of waivers. Maybe you picked him up for a pittance, because like in one of my leagues, like someone got him for like $1 or $2 a couple of weeks ago when it looked like CMC might be traded. So of course now you want him because of the stats you mentioned. But it still is kind of a split between him and Chuba Hubbard. I think he outtouched him. I think it was 17-11 in the end. And Hubbard did pick up an ankle injury, although we're led to believe it's relatively minor. Having said that, all things considered, if you can get someone who's going to see any kind of volume, I think if volume-based running back, you can still have him on your bench and maybe spot start him depending on the matchup.
Yeah, I was kind of curious to see how this rotation was going to go, and Chuba Hubbard ended up playing a higher percentage of snaps and then left in the fourth quarter. So he, at the time when he left, he was playing the higher percentage of snaps. However, having said that, Deonta Foreman ended up having the better day, less the touchdown, which we know is a fluke stat. I think either of these guys are rosterable at this point. They don't want PJ Walker to throw the ball a ton, would be my guess. The other thing is that Hubbard did leave with the injury in the fourth quarter, and that's why I have Foreman here instead of Chuba Hubbard. And Deonta Foreman, we saw what he did last year with Tennessee when he was given the reins of that backfield when Derrick Henry got hurt. He was a very good college player. He had, I think it was an Achilles injury, if I'm not mistaken, when he was in the NFL, which really kind of hindered him. But he certainly showed up. 15 carries for over 100 yards against what we all thought, even going into this week, was a really good Bucs run defense. And these two guys pretty much made them look like Swiss cheese. So Deonta Foreman, he's not at the top of my list. Like, if Gus Edwards is there, he would be at the top of my list because I think he's the clear running back to roster in Baltimore. I do think that Deonta Foreman is going to be a really nice bye week fill-in. And listen, if you have him on your roster and he starts to ball out every week, then you start him. And at that point, it's kind of found money because you'd hope that you have, you know, maybe two solid running backs. And then if you get another guy that's going to put up double-digit points for you in your flex position as a running back that has touchdown upside, I think that's a pretty good payoff.
Absolutely, yeah. If you can get anyone with upside going into week 8 that you can grab for like not a lot of waiver dollars, I would imagine. I think that's the thing. I will say I'm not advocating to blow your entire waiver wire budget on Foreman, for example. If you had to pick one of the guys we've talked about, I'd rather you do that for Gus Edwards versus Deonta Foreman. But I mean, he's still clearly very talented and has a place on your roster. But yeah, it's all upside, I think, at this point because of the offense. And I mean, maybe there's a chance more trades happen for the Carolina Panthers before the end of the season. One guy that I think there's a possibility this next player is affected to a certain degree by any sort of trade is Kyren Williams, who is rostered in 33% of Yahoo leagues. Kyren Williams, of course, running back for the Los Angeles Rams. And I feel like the hype train for Kyren Williams was derailed. It was like maybe like in 1 hour, maybe like less than that, Matt, because before the season started, everyone was like, oh man, maybe you should pick up Kyren Williams. And then he got like a high ankle sprain in like literally the first 10 minutes of the first quarter of game one. And then he was placed on the IR. And that's where he's been. He's still on the IR, I think, right now. I believe the 21-day window for him to be activated to go back to the active roster is about to begin. So if you're looking ahead, if you're like well positioned enough to be able to roster Kyren Williams, or you can stash him in your IR spot if you have one, or you have room on your bench if it's not a super short bench, I definitely recommend going to pick him up because there is a real chance, now that the Rams are back from their bye, there is a real chance in the not-too-distant future that Kyren Williams overtakes certainly Darrell Henderson Jr. It doesn't look like Cam Akers. Looks like Akers' career in Los Angeles is probably done. So maybe he gets traded. There's the rumor that Akers was a part of a potential offer by the Rams to the Panthers for Christian McCaffrey, who of course ended up accepting the 49ers offer instead. So if Kyren Williams is available and you have room, I definitely recommend stashing him. And you can probably get him for free, if not a couple of dollars right now.
Well, I did go to look in our work league, and I realized that you had already had him stashed, so good for you,
Matt,
show.
Matt, I
and
literally stashed him. I stashed him in week one. Like, literally in week one, I put him away, and I forgot about him. I just left him there.
And that's the smart way to go. I did that with Tyquan Thornton and Greg Dulcich. I mean, you have to do those things. I'm pissed that I didn't stash Gus Edwards because I did it in so many other leagues. But anyway, I digress. Listen, Kyren Williams was really good in college with Notre Dame. I'm a Notre Dame guy, so I'm a little bit biased here, but Kyren Williams had 1,125 rushing yards and 1,002 rushing yards his last 2 years at Notre Dame, where he had 27 rushing touchdowns in those 2 years, 13 as a sophomore, 14 as a junior. But this is the key for me with Kyren Williams. He had 35 catches in 2020 and 42 catches in 2021 with Notre Dame, 4 receiving touchdowns in those 2 years. Kyren Williams is a very, very versatile running back, and he can be utilized in multiple different ways. The fact that he is one of the better pass catchers out of this draft class bodes well for him because he's better than Darrell Henderson at that. Okay, so that's where I kind of sit with Kyren Williams. Darrell Henderson has been a good running back in the NFL. I wouldn't say he's been anything special. So there's an opportunity here for Kyren Williams to make noise. I think I read that Sean McVay said he's probably about a week out from being, you know, activated from that 21-day window. So there's still some time here. And you're right, it is coming up very shortly where he can be activated. And they do have to activate him within 21 days of opening that window, or else he's done for the season. Kyren Williams could end up being a league winner for you at the end of the season, especially as the injuries start to mount, because we know that that's going to happen. And if there were to be an injury to Daryl Henderson, which last time I checked, he's not the beacon of health for running backs, I think that this could be a really, really solid pickup, and you have to get ahead of it now, or else you're not going to be able to get him as that window closes. Get him on your roster, stash him on your IR, and reap the benefits once he comes back.
Yeah, definitely. I'm really hoping he's good. I think the hope for me in our 14-team work league is over, and we're not doing keepers this year, so I guess it like won't really matter in the end. But I think at this point in those kind of situations, I just live to be correct. So I'm just happy. I'd be happy if he plays and is okay, even if it doesn't matter in the end. So, but yeah, I think 33% owned means that he definitely is still available in some leagues. Clearly, that ownership creeping up because people have some kind of expectations for them, like you were discussing, based on his play in Notre Dame and based on all the coach speak, right? Like all the reporters who cover the Rams and kind of trying to parse the coach speak from what is in truth will happen from out of the mouth of Sean McVay. It's hard. It's not an easy thing to do. And I think you are to a certain degree, like kind of rubbing the magic eight ball a little bit, but certainly I think Kyren Williams is, there's definitely some potential there. The last guy I wanted to get to with you before we get out of here, Matt, is Tyler Allgeier from the Atlanta Falcons. He's owned in 40% of Yahoo League. So, you know, like in the same general range as Foreman and Edwards, as we've been talking about, but a tiny bit lower owned than Gus Edwards at 40% versus Edwards 44%. I just want to say this. This crushes the value of Drake London and certainly our guy, Kyle Pitts. But this is a game in which early on, the Atlanta Falcons were trailing the Cincinnati Bengals by 21 points. They ended up losing this game by 18 points. And even so, there was a 29-13 run-to-pass ratio basically all game. Like, there is not one situation in the NFL we have now learned that Arthur Smith will not run the ball in. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the score is. It doesn't matter what the situation is, what the distance and down is. It honestly does not matter. And Tyler Allgeier seems to be the guy at least for one more week. And that's why I wanted to bring this up with you, because I believe Cordarrelle Patterson isn't eligible to return until week 9. So Allgeier, who outtouched Caleb Huntley, I believe by quite a lot. I think, I forget what the numbers are here, but it says here, oh, here we go. 62% of the offensive snaps went to Tyler Allgeier versus Caleb Huntley. So at least for one more week, if he is available on the waiver wire, you can go get him and probably have a low to mid-tier RB2. Where are you at on how much fab dollars you should be spending to acquire someone like Allgeier, who sees a lot of carries, but probably will go back to being a backup after week 8?
The only reason why I would maybe spend a little bit more, like maybe 10% of my fab budget, the only reason why is that Arthur Smith clearly loves to ruin fantasy football. Like, Arthur Smith is actually the worst human being ever. In terms of fantasy football, Arthur Smith doesn't need football. Arthur Smith, his dad, I think, started FedEx or something like that. So he's got like $1 billion in the bank. Yeah, man. Arthur Smith has a lot of money waiting for him. So he is single-handedly ruining the Atlanta Falcons. It's almost as if Arthur Smith believes that he has some form of Derrick Henry on his team, like he had when he was the offensive coordinator in Tennessee. Anyway, that's enough of my rant on Arthur Smith and how he's the worst. Clearly, they just want to run the ball. So if Cordarrelle Patterson comes back and he gets 15 carries, if they're going to run the ball 30 times, I would assume that Allgeier is going to get the ball at least 12 to 14 times. I would assume that that's the case. Listen, the numbers aren't great. The last 3 weeks, he's had 45 rushing yards, 51 rushing yards, 50 rushing yards. His highest yards per attempt was 3.5, and that was week 5 against the Bucks, a game in which was a lot closer than anyone had expected. He has the one touchdown on the season. He's only had two targets, which he's turned into two catches for 25 yards. I mean, it's a really low. It feels like the floor is like 5 points, 6 points, maybe. If you're looking at rushing yards here, It's just he's getting the volume. It's just not turning into much. It's probably more of a punt play, you know, flex just because of the volume. Like, if you can get somebody that's getting, you know, double-digit touches in your flex spot, especially with the bye weeks that are upcoming, then, yeah, that's fine. But they just want to run the ball. They have no interest in throwing. It's a complete disaster. I don't know why Desmond Ridder hasn't been put in at quarterback. Like, it is a complete mess. And Allgaier is kind of the beneficiary of it being a big mess. And we don't know what Cordarrelle Patterson is going to look like when he comes back from the injury. We don't even know if he's actually going to be ready once he is eligible to come off the IR. So there's also that as part of the conversation. And just based on volume, I think it's a guy that you probably should roster, especially if you have running back issues. If you don't have running back issues, then you should not be going out to get Tyler Allgaier and just leave him on the waiver wire, let somebody else have that problem. But if you have a running back issue, you should pick him up as a speculative ad just because he's getting the volume right now, and that could continue when Cordarrelle Patterson comes back.
Yeah, and again, Cordarrelle Patterson is scheduled to return off the IR in week 9, but like you said, is he going to be effective right away? Does it take a couple weeks to ramp up? This is an offense that just loves to run, and run the ball some more. So if that's the case, there's probably always going to be some kind of role for a guy like that on your fantasy team. It's just, it's one of those guys that like exists in the can't always start him, but you don't really want to drop him so someone else gets him kind of camp. But
yep.
And hey, I mean, like if you mentioned the floor for him, if it's like 5-6 points, pardon me, then I think I think like this is the kind of year where offense is so wacky that I think you might as well hold on to a guy like that, because often 6 points out of your flex is like, oh, especially this year, you're like, oh yeah, sign me up for 6 points, right? Like that seems to be the case for a lot of guys this year. So yeah, I'm all in on maybe not all in, but I do definitely like me some Tyler Allgaier with the Atlanta Falcons. That kind of does it for our waiver wire portion of this episode. Matt, because the Thursday Nighter will obviously take place before we're back on the air on Sunday morning, and again, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern on the Sportsnet Radio Network, I do want to get to the Thursday Nighter, and I just want to ask you a simple question, because we talked about Gus Edwards and his place in the pecking order and so on, so we don't have to go into this too much, but I just want to ask you one thing. Should we be starting Tom Brady? Like, what the hell is going on with Tom Brady? Like, did Gisele Bündchen curse him? Like, has he been cursed, like, fantasy-wise? What do you do with Tom Brady? Because he put up another stinker, like 2 weeks in a row where you're like, oh, man, what a juicy matchup, and he just completely does not deliver. And like I'm in a boat, and I bet a lot of people are in the same boat, where I have the choice of starting Brady in a 2QB league or Geno Smith, and I and the projections are relatively similar, but I feel more confident in starting Geno Smith over Brady this weekend.
As you should. I was also the one that said, oh, this matchup was supposed to be last week. You know, right. The Steelers were terrible. They had everybody out, and oh, this is going to be it for Tom Brady. And he stunk. And then I said, oh, J.C. Horn might not play. And oh, my God. I do believe that if Mike Evans catches that touchdown, that wide open 75-yard touchdown, brutal, that we're having a different conversation. But I will tell you this. No, you cannot start Tom Brady over Geno Smith. You just can't. Geno Smith has been putting up the numbers. He has 11 touchdowns to 3 interceptions. Tom Brady still only has 8 touchdown passes in 7 games. I know that he has, you know, only thrown the one interception. He's thrown for more yards than Geno Smith has. But Tom Brady, that offense is just not the same. I would not be starting him. I'm just... Like, if I have a better option, like, if it's Tom Brady, or maybe it's Jared Goff, or if it's Tom Brady or Marcus Mariota, I'm probably starting him. But listen, show, this is a week, and I can't believe that I'm saying this just because they've been so good even this late in their career. This is a week where I'd probably be sitting Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers.
That's crazy. That's crazy, honestly.
Like, Aaron Rodgers is coming off an MVP. I know they lost Davante Adams, but that offense is a mess.
Ooh, yeah,
the Tampa Bay offense is a mess. And Aaron Rodgers, as much as he is my favorite player that is not on my team, the Buffalo Bills, he gets the Bills this week. I would be sitting Aaron Rodgers everywhere.
Are they playing in Buffalo or are they playing Green Bay?
They are. They're playing in Orchard Park. Okay. So good luck. Yeah, and the Bills coming off of a bye. Good luck.
Yeah. I know there are a lot of Packers fans, like both at Sportsnet and generally speaking, like in the GTA, who I'm sure will make the trek down, with a lot of Bills fans from the GTA who I'm sure will make the trek as well, down across the border. I gotta say, that is gonna be A, one hostile environment, and B, like, I don't know how much tickets cost, but I bet that's gonna be a pretty expensive trip to see the Rodgers and the Packers get, like, ritually sacrificed to Josh Allen and the fans at Orchard Park. Like, that place is ruthless. Like, I've been there a couple times to watch some Patriots games. I went down there last year, or a couple of years ago, before the pandemic. Time's a flat circle, Matt. But I went there before the pandemic to watch, with some of my pals, to watch the Saints play the Bills. And even though the Saints won that game, like, man, Bills fans are ruthless. So I am very much looking forward to that game. By the way, I will say, the last time I went down to Orchard Park, I believe at the time it was called New Era Field. I don't actually know what the stadium is called now. I don't know if you know off the top of your head, but the last time I went down,
I think it's Highmark Stadium now. I think
Highmark Stadium. But it was like Highmark Stadium. It was Ralph Wilson Stadium for a long time. The New Era. Now it's Highmark.
It'll always be the Ralph to me. Yeah. It will always be the Ralph to me.
That's definitely, like, the easiest way to remember it. Like, the Ralph, it's the, you know, instead of, like, blank corporate field, right? So, but I will say, I always kind of thought that fans jumping through tables while on fire was kind of like a, not an urban myth, but like something the, like, media, like ESPN and like NFL Network kind of played up. It is absolutely a thing that happens, like, hundreds of times when you're tailgating on game day. Like, I was honestly surprised. I don't know if, like, I'm sure you've seen it, 'cause I'm sure you've been down there a lot more than I have, but man, people do it a lot. Like, good for those fans, 'cause that's not an easy thing to commit to.
So I can honestly say that I've never seen it live.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and I've tailgated down there more than my fair share of times. I've never actually seen it. I've never done it, because my wife said, if you jump through a table, you're an idiot. I'm still trying to do, I still got to make, like, a table out of, like, styrofoam to break my newborn daughter through it to baptize her into Bill's Mafia. So that's going to be coming. But me going through a table, like, I want to do it. But I'm also way too cheap to buy a table just to break it.
Just to smash it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They're not cheap.
I feel like you'd have to, like, in some part, like, sabotage it. Like, you know, like, just, like, saw through it a little bit, so when you land on it, it for sure breaks. That's what, that, maybe that's cheating, but you know what? I mean, all right, maybe if you're jumping off a car or something like that, maybe it'll do that anyways. But anyways, that was my experience in, like, the two times I've been down to the Ralph in the last, like, 5 to 6 years. But yeah, hey, Packers Bills, that's going to be a good one this weekend. We talked about Ravens and Buccaneers. That's a pretty fun Thursday nighter. And I mean, the way you know, I like to think that it's a good matchup on paper, but because it's on Thursday night, it'll probably be like a 9-6 field goal fest where the only scorers are Justin Tucker and Ryan Succop. That's what I'm expecting.
It's gonna be a nightmare. Good luck.
Good luck. All right, well, good luck to everyone's fantasy teams this week. Good luck to the waiver wire pickups. You can always text us at 590-590, name and location for the People's Text Line, every Sunday morning from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern. We always take all of your text line questions, whether they're on the air or off the air. We will answer every single one of your text line questions. So looking forward to that. That's Matt Marchese. I'm Sho Ali. You've been listening to The Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.